From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea, in this week for Celeste Headley. Calls to cut back government spending helped put former Georgia Congressman Tom Price in President Trump's cabinet.
We are spending ourselves into oblivion. It is fundamentally wrong. It is morally wrong.
But as Secretary of Health and Human Services, so far, Price has chartered dozens of private planes and cost taxpayers far more than available commercial flights would have. That story is fodder for our break room coming up this hour. But first, yesterday we talked about cats in our homes and on the streets.
We need to really remember that we're talking about animals here who deserve a chance at life, that the answer is not to eradicate cats, but to work together to reduce cat populations.
That's Barbara King, who writes about animal behavior. She advocates for trap, neuter, and release, or TNR, as an approach to curbing feral cat colonies. Here are your first thoughts. Charlie Muse writes via Facebook, TNR has been a terrible failure. Diseases run through cat colonies, threatening pets. Native birds, mammals, and reptiles are wiped out. Sandboxes and gardens become litter boxes. TNR is a case of misplaced compassion, which eats up resources while doing no good for anyone.
Hi, my name is Eddie. Cats should never be allowed outside, period. I live in a place, Brunswick, Georgia, where I have personally witnessed that it's impossible for a juvenile bird to fledge anywhere in town without being killed by a cat.
Pat Roach in Augusta writes, make sure your household cat running free has a rabies vaccination. These are usually available for a reasonable fee at special clinics set up by vets and animal control. Well, listeners, we always want to know what you think. Call us at 404-500-9457. We're on Twitter at OST Talk, or you can post to Facebook, and we might feature your comments on the show. Well, Hurricanes Harvey and Irma have wreaked their havoc. Maria as well. Damage is in the billions. The storms have cleared and the rebuilding process has begun in a lot of places, but there's growing concern that insurance companies will not be willing or perhaps even able to handle the huge influx of claims. Joining us is investigative journalist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Carrie Teagarden. Her article about this subject appeared in the AJC earlier this month, and it's only gotten more relevant as the fallout from Maria has started to look worse and worse. Carrie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, just remind everybody what areas of Georgia have been hit hardest by hurricane damage recently and what's happened to them.
I think, you know, many parts of inland Georgia were hit, even though we think of hurricanes mostly in the coast. You only have to look around my neighborhood in Grant Park to see giant trees had fallen on houses.
Sure.
Brunswick, St. Simons. I mean, it was pretty much everywhere. You know, to date, the insurance department told us yesterday about 56,000 claims have already been filed with various insurance companies, and those are from across the state.
Gotcha. So what's one reason why people filing those claims might not get the money they're expecting?
The biggest reason is that most people don't have flood insurance. I mean, people don't even really think about it. I think a lot of people, you know, like me say, oh, I've been paying my homeowner's policy for all these years, and if something happens to my house, it's going to be covered. But, you know, the thing is, it may not be in your policy, right? And who of us reads all the fine print of their homeowner's insurance policy until something happens? And then you're like,
sure.
Oh, gosh. And flood insurance is a separate coverage. Most people who in your homeowners, it's not part of it. And most people don't realize that until their house is filled with water.
Why are these things usually sold as separate products by insurance companies?
Well, the federal flood insurance program covers flood. And so how it's a federal program and how that has worked generally is that if you're in what's considered a flood zone, and there are various gradations of that, and you have a mortgage, then your mortgage holder will require you to have flood coverage. But the thing is, just because you're not in the flood zone doesn't mean your house is never going to flood. And there's been a lot of controversy around that. Are these flood maps out of date? I recall a number of years ago, we had a ton of flooding in Metro Atlanta that was particularly bad in Austell. which is in Cobb County, Georgia. And there were a lot of talk then that, you know, there'd been so much development, so much had changed that really these maps couldn't really keep up with where the actual riskiest areas were. And the other thing is, if you don't, you know, once your house is paid for, having flood insurance is optional. So again, and I'll just give you this example of how likely it is for people to have it and still be prone to flooding in from Hurricane Harvey in the Houston area. You know, the eight counties that were most directly affected by Harvey, only 17% of homeowners had flood insurance in those areas that were hit. So that's going to show you that most people are not going to have any coverage for that cleanup there.
So I knew about the whole flood insurance thing. One thing I learned for the first time when I read your article was that a lot of homeowners insurance policies also don't cover wind damage.
They generally cover wind, but there can also be this... in the fine print, again, that's what it all sort of comes down to, is something called these anti-concurrent clauses. And this is when things get really tricky and confusing. And this is sort of a new thing that people realized when some of these big hurricanes hit. So what that means is, in layman's terms, I'll get as close as accurate as I can here, is that if you have both wind and flooding, then there are these clauses that can say, well, we're not going to cover wind, even if it may have been part of it, if both things took place.
Huh.
It's sort of a, what some of the consumer advocates describe it as sort of a trap door. You know,
yeah,
when you're
I mean, these things can happen. One can lead to another. I mean, my office and several adjoining rooms here at Mercer University in Macon, the winds from Hurricane Irma damaged our roof, and as a result, it rained into our offices. So that was wind and flooding. And I don't know how that would affect Mercer's insurance policy in this regard.
And that's when sometimes it gets more complicated. You know, as the insurance department, I was talking with them about this yesterday. Okay, if it's rain that's coming from the sky and the wind carries the water in, that should be covered generally. But if you see that it's water coming up from below, that's more considered flooding. And that's they're probably not going to cover that. And if you have both, maybe what came from the sky might not be covered. So it's really not the kind of thing you expect to get into. What we found in, you know, Atlanta, if a big giant tree falls on your house or your car, that's probably going to be covered. Tends to be kind of the some of the more straightforward claims in this that they're going to deal with that pretty quickly. Although we did talk to a guy here in Atlanta area who had like two trees fell on his house. And we all know, especially in town, most of our houses are surrounded by big trees.
Sure.
And then so he said he was really happy with his insurance coverage. But then and then something else happened and they canceled him. So you may get great coverage, but if it happens too many times, then you're going to lose your policy.
We're speaking to Atlanta Journal-Constitution investigative reporter Carrie Teagarden, who has written about the insurance industry and whether or not Georgians who are filing claims pertaining to all their recent hurricane damage are actually going to get any of the money that they are expecting. Insurance claims also spiked considerably, of course, after Hurricane Sandy back in 2012. John and Gail Miro's house in New York had to be torn down and completely rebuilt after the storm, but their insurance company would only cover a fraction of the policy amount. Here is John Miro on 60 Minutes.
I was like, how can you tell me that this isn't, that you can't cover this, that I'm not going to get the full amount of my insurance? I said, you got my payments every month. I said, now it's time for you to pay, and is what you're going to tell me?
Here's lawyer Stephen Mostyn, who represented the Miros and many other families who filed flood insurance claims after Sandy.
There's been a systematic fraud on the policyholders who filed flood claims from Sandy.
What's the fraud?
The fraud is taking engineers' reports and changing them from saying there was structural damage to saying there's no structural damage, or giving the engineers a form to fill out that already has the conclusion of no structural damage.
So Carrie Teagarden with the AJC, how can homeowners be on guard against their insurance companies not just using the fine print against them, but potentially even lying and committing fraud against them?
Well, that was such a big issue related to Superstorm Sandy. I mean, there was a whole PBS Frontline really exposed the extent of that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what can you do? I mean, there was, I think, a lot of response to that, some of those findings, and the many, many people who were just, you know, robbed basically of their coverage. And FEMA has said that they've really corrected those issues. But only time will tell. You know, I interviewed some folks on the Georgia coast who had had flood claims in Hurricane Matthew, right? It just happened, and many of them were hit again this time. And they said their experience with the with flood coverage was okay. The biggest problem they ran into is that it's pretty limited. The max you can get for damage to your house is $250,000, you know, and then there's another $100,000 for contents. So, you know, if you're talking about a house on the coast and it's a total loss, you know, $250,000 might not cover it. And a lot of these people had just finished, again, or were just putting the final touches on their repairs from Matthew, and now they've got to come back from round two. I talked with one homeowner in on Tybee who said she's going to rebuild this time. She was just really thrilled that her new kitchen was almost done, again, from the previous storm. And she said she's just going to completely rebuild and put her home on stilts. Now, that's not going to be probably covered, the whole thing. And another thing people run into that the consumer advocates have raised is that, okay, your homeowners or your flood may cover to replace what you had, but it's not going to necessarily cover bringing you up to current building codes.
Yeah.
So let's say your house is destroyed and the new codes actually require you to build up on stilts. Your policy is not going to cover that. That's going to be on you, and you won't even be able to rebuild in many cases unless you meet the current codes. So that's another problem that people can run into, you know. And I think what people have found is when you're getting into a battle with, you know, your insurance company, if it's, you know, if you don't have the resources, or if it's not a huge claim, that can be really difficult to deal with.
In the last minute that we have, Carrie, what are the odds that insurance companies simply won't be able to pay out all of the claims to which their customers are entitled? Insurance is fundamentally about pooling risk. It's based on the idea that not everyone who has insurance will need insurance. But if everybody needs the insurance, then you could bankrupt the insurance company. Right. Is that going to happen?
I think the insurers have the money to pay for it. I talked to State Farm right after this hit, and they were very confident not only, you know, they can easily cover what's there and that they had the people to actually quickly process the claims. You know, in Georgia alone, where the current estimate is over $300 million already, the insurance commissioner said $336 million in damage across Georgia was the current estimate. The thing is, what will happen to our rates going into the future? We've seen huge increases in auto, and I think what people need to look for is how will the regulators, you know, here in the Georgia Insurance Commissioner's Office, take a close look at any future rate increases that might the insurers might be putting in for, saying, oh, we had so many losses. So we'll be looking for that. And we'll be at the Atlanta Journal and Constitution. We always keep a watchdog eye on the insurance office, and we'll continue with that to keep an eye on what's happening to the upcoming bills.
Certainly. That's Carrie Teagarden, investigative journalist with the Atlanta Journal Constitution. Thank you, Carrie. Good work.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, the Break Room Gang is going to consider another eventful week, but first, our Georgia playlist grows by two essential songs. This is On Second Thought. It's On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Celeste Headley. Let's add a couple more tunes to our Georgia playlist. For this, we ask people to choose two songs that they think best represent Georgia. Two simple rules: nominations have to be songs written or performed by a Georgian, and artists cannot nominate one of their own songs. Today we feature the Athens band Dream Culture. Frontman Evan Lema makes his picks for the Georgia playlist.
Hey, my name is Evan Lema, and I play in the Athens-based psych rock band Dream Culture. My first pick for the Georgia playlist is Phone Call by Washed Out off of his High Times EP from 2009, which was only originally released on cassette. I chose this one because I ended up listening to this record very obsessively, becoming very obsessed with the way that it sounds, like the sonic signature of it. And I'm assuming also that comes from the fact that, or the possible fact that the MP3s I was listening to were ripped straight from the cassette tape. And that kind of like helped me segue into this desire for more lo-fi music and for the music that I make to be more lo-fi. It's very sample heavy, which, you know, I'd say the majority of his catalog is, aside from maybe his record Paracosm, very sample heavy, you know, a little bit repetitive. The drums, the whole thing is very dark sounding, you know, a lot of the highs rolled off of it. And, you know, it just kind of has that classic Washed Out vocal to where it sounds like it's coming from a very, very great distance away, very reverb heavy, you know. His moniker being Washed Out is pretty spot on. And then it also stems from a cool personal experience where I was lucky enough to meet Washed Out a couple of times. You know, I got to ask him a question, and I was like, hey, on the song Phone Call, there's this weird phone call, like a literal phone call, at the end of the song. And what is that all about? Like, what's going on there? Him and his wife, their eyes widen, and they're like, oh, wow, that's from a long time ago. And they seemed pretty excited to answer the question, and it was that he had just had this weird friend in college who would call him drunk, like, almost every night, and just tell him, like, oh, man, like, you gotta feel it, you know, like, realize the design is divine or whatever. And he just thought it was so funny that he'd throw it in a song. My second pick for the Georgia playlist is Omission by Warehouse, which was a art punk band from Atlanta. They're from Atlanta, art punk band, and I picked it because I remember when I was younger and I got invited to this house show down in Atlanta, and I was really only 17. I remember I walk into the room where all the show is happening, and the walls are covered in aluminum foil as sound insulation, and it was very hot in there. And there was Ben's band, and they were playing at like a million miles an hour. So fast, just like da-da-da-da-da-da-da, very fast. I remember Ben was super cool, and he sent me their record like way before it came out. I just ended up listening to this one song, Omission, quite a bit. Sonically, Warehouse has always been a little thin, but that's not necessarily to their detriment. You know, that's definitely part of their aesthetic. The drums are a little thin. The guitars are usually pretty clean, maybe sometimes with a little bit of chorus on them. Kind of like a very captured tracksy, you know, kind of like New York art punk sound. Oh, something to definitely touch on would be Elaine Edenfield's voice in the track, and her voice in general. Very raspy, very kind of like Janis Joplin-y, and you can sense this kind of like anxiety in their playing and the franticness of it that really puts this image in your head of like, you know, a situation that's like very stressful. And that's kind of what that song conveys, and I think in that sense, it's a little bit cathartic, you know? Like, you could put on Omission or Mental Faculty by Warehouse when you're like really stressed out or something. You know how people say like people who listen to metal music, it makes them like less violent sometimes just because of how cathartic it is. Well, I think possibly, especially off that album Tesseract, some of their stuff is really good to put on if you're ever like a little stressed out.
That was Evan Lema of the Athens-based group Dream Culture. They perform at the Seeds of Sound Festival in Sparta this Saturday and at Caledonia Lounge in Athens Saturday, October 14th. Well, it's been a long week. We have fended off robocalls. We've talked to longtime friends of Greg Allman about his new and final record. And we've discussed the psychology of racism. So as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and think about what happened this week. Time now for the break room.
It's a land of joy.
Devastating for North Korea. That's called the military option. If we have to take it, we will.
Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy?
All those clips hint at stories you're about to talk about. Joining us in the break room are, well, let's do something different this morning, fellas. Let's and ladies. Let's have y'all introduce yourselves. Let's start with Roxanne.
Oh, God, now you're starting with me. Okay, I am Roxanne Donovan. I'm a licensed psychologist in Georgia and also a professor of psychology and interdisciplinary studies at Kennesaw State University.
Good morning. I'm Tomika DePriest, Senior Director of Communications at Emory University.
Well, we know each other so well, we should introduce each other. But this is Greg Williams. I'm a mortgage banker and the host of a conservative podcast called Greg's List on AmericasWebRadio.com.
And I'm Hector Fernandez-Leste, professor in the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Georgia State University.
Fantastic. Welcome, everyone. So last year, NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick spurred controversy for his Take a Knee protest during the national anthem at games. He made a point of not rising for the anthem before the games, as is customary. It was a protest, he said, against racial injustice, particularly in policing. And his move sparked a massive controversy, and some players now are following his example. Teams are, for example, linking arms in solidarity.
The Seahawks ended up doing was very powerful, not only because they were all together, they had coaches intermixed, and a lot of people in the stands were doing it, too. That's what it's supposed to be all about.
On Sunday, the Seattle Seahawks and Tennessee Titans jointly stayed off the field during the national anthem. The Seahawks saying, quote, "We will not stand for the injustice that has plagued people of color in this country. Out of love for our country and in honor for the sacrifices made on our behalf, we unite to oppose those that would deny our most basic freedoms," end quote. President Trump called the move unpatriotic in a series of tweets. His criticism seemed to have only grown the movement. The Atlanta Falcons have joined the protests. Even owner Arthur Blank participated. This phenomenon has been going on for more than a year, folks. Why do we think that it has escalated so hugely in the past couple of weeks? Is this all because the president poked at the issue, Greg?
I think so. I think he certainly stirred it. And I think the protests that we've seen the past couple of weeks are a little different than what Colin Kaepernick originally was protesting. I think some of these are protesting the you know, the fact that the president is trying to embroil himself in this topic. And these are actually protests directed towards Trump. And I think they've kind of lost their focus when Kaepernick was trying to actually protest, you know, some of the injustices and some of the murders of black males at the hands of police officers. I thought that protest had some legs. Obviously, Colin Kaepernick, I think, chose a very, I guess, unorganized way to do it. And the fact that some people are now saying we shouldn't play the national anthem before games to avoid this, you know, running away from a controversy is no way to help the protesters feel like they've been adequately heard. The NFL players that choose to protest, they're going to have to decide if their protests are actually evoking the change they want or creating an unnecessary distraction.
Tamika, do you think that the message is getting jumbled in all of this?
In some ways, but let me say this. I think the Titans, the Seahawks, and I think other teams were very clear that their actions were really linked to Colin Kaepernick's original thrust, which is a protest against racial discrimination and police brutality. So there it is. I think Colin Kaepernick is very much our Jackie Robinson of today, very much our Muhammad Ali of the day. And I think that the Constitution allows for that as it relates to freedom of speech. But I also think as it relates to open expression and protest.
Hector and Roxanne, you know, the president, his original comments that kind of sparked the latest round of controversy around this, where he got up in front of a group of people in Alabama and he said, wouldn't you like to see one of the owners of these NFL teams or the coaches say to a protesting player, get off the field, you're fired. And a lot of people said that this was the president advocating or in fact, even it represented state intervention to chill free speech. Do you think that that's a fair characterization?
I think it's a fair characterization. And at the end of the day, peaceful protests in general, it's inconvenient and uncomfortable. It's not about making people comfortable. It's actually about making them uncomfortable to bring to light an uncomfortable truth, right? A truth we want to ignore. And it's interesting that we're ignoring a lot the why Kaepernick kneeled, to what Tamika said, the racial injustice and police brutality. And we're spending a whole lot of time on the how people are protesting and when they're protesting. And I think that, again, is to reclaim some level of comfort, because it's uncomfortable to talk about racial injustice and it's uncomfortable to talk about police brutality. But my God, it's necessary.
Last thought on this goes to you, Hector.
Kaepernick is trying to criticize the state. And as American, it is his duty and right to criticize the state. The fact that our head of state talks in such a way that is out of line with poor language, by the way, makes it at all worse. The NFL, on the other hand, is trying to, you know, manage the problem because they're in trouble. I mean, they have for years, like many sports, use nationalism as an ideology to support their product. Guess what? Our president does the very same thing. So if you play with fire, you get burned. And it's part of the equation. Then again, it teaches people one or two things about how we're supposed to behave with respect to states. We're not minions. We're not supposed to render tribute to the state on a daily basis, especially for authoritarian rule. So I'm 100% behind Kaepernick.
Speaking of Trump, the president this weekend tweeted, quote, just heard Foreign Minister of North Korea speak at the UN. If he echoes thoughts of Little Rocket Man, they won't be around much longer. Now, Little Rocket Man is what the president is calling North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. North Korea's foreign minister said that Trump's tweet amounted to a declaration of war and asserted that his country would therefore be within its rights to shoot down American bombers even beyond North Korean airspace. So, folks, do we think that we're actually headed to war between two nuclear powers, or is this just a bunch of hot air between two regimes that are both prone to, shall we say, hyperbolic rhetoric?
If we keep going in this direction, I dread that the possibility becomes greater by the day. I mean, if we have a war, it will go nuclear. If it's going to go nuclear, we're all going to be toast. I mean, I really don't want to be there to witness what follows. I think the vast majority of the American people are not assessing the risk and the seriousness of the situation when we have two people with very little political experience using their mouth a lot and not their brains.
Well, this is pretty typical of the North Korean regime from the past few decades, ever since Kim Jong-il came into power. And it's one of those, it's saber-rattling, of course. And, you know, we've been kind of listening to what their threats are. And Trump has finally just said, you know what, we're going to, you know, just fight this bombastic nature the way I know how. And I call Kim Jong-un Fat Elvis, actually. So that's a little bit of a different nickname for him. But, you know, are we taking it seriously? North Korea will not physically be able to invade us. They're more of a terroristic threat, I think. And I really think South Korea and Japan have a lot more to worry about with this this blustery talk. So we do need to take that aspect serious. Are we physically going to be invaded in the continental United States? Absolutely not.
That's not the point. The point is, if there are nuclear weapons, it's going to activate alarms all over the world. You have some nuclear explosion, and something's bound to happen afterwards.
Yeah. I think the point is that we don't know. Yeah. We're left with two unpredictable people doing things that impact millions of people, including the world. And it's in that unknown that we sit here speculating what individuals are going to do.
Right.
I can't believe we've reached this point.
Yeah, it's the unknown that's unnerving. And so I don't know if I need to order potassium iodine pills and try to find a shelter kit. I don't know.
I've been hoarding bottled water.
Break, folks. It's the break room here on Second Thought. We'll be back in a second. It's on Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Celeste Headlee. And we are having coffee and conversation in the break room, as we do each Friday, talking about the week's news. My guests are Hector Fernandez, professor in the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Georgia State University, Tamika DePriest, senior director of communications at Emory University, Greg Williams, mortgage banker and host of the conservative radio show Greg's List, and Roxanne Donovan, professor of psychology at Kennesaw State University. Now, folks, the Huffington Post is creating an American road trip playlist. Each place gets a list of songs most listened to in that city. And HuffPo has just released their Atlanta playlist. Here's one of the songs they put on it. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much. That was, of course, Crazy by Gnarls Barkley. Other songs on the HuffPo's list of songs that represent Atlanta include No Scrubs by TLC, Losing My Religion by REM. Folks, do we think that they got the sound of Atlanta right? What do you think, Roxanne?
Oh, why did you start with me? I am not...
Someone else can take it first.
I'm not an Atlanta native, and my music taste is 80s pop, so I'm going to defer to my wonderful colleagues.
Roxanne,
come on.
I thought... They did a decent job with the list. I can't remember, but scrolling through, I was looking for a Future and no Jeezy.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you know, I was trying to think, have we, you know, actually produced any pop stars? Collective Soul is a band that's pretty good. I think Driving and Crying is from here. So I was looking for a little bit more kind of a Southern rock feel, as well as obviously we're very prolific hip hop producers and have been for years. And that's not going to go away any soon. So I would like to see maybe a couple more diverse songs on there. I was glad REM was there. I'm a Georgia Bulldog, so good to see Athens representing.
Hector?
Well, you know what? They have a single reggaeton song at the very end of the list. You know, hip-hop rules in Atlanta, but the city has changed, and it's so much richer now. I mean, I particularly have a problem. There's not a single Bollywood tune. There's no K-pop. I mean, the city has gone beyond black and white. I mean, come on, guys.
There's no banjo music. I mean, what's going to rhyme here?
This is in the middle of a
Hector
time warp.
Hector and Greg, we're in a time when Cardi B is number one.
And so that's
nationwide.
And the Cash Me Outside girl just got signed to $1 million contract from Dr. Phil.
So y'all need to
realize that.
I mean, if musically speaking, you want to still keep certain groups like absent. I mean, that's up to you. But I live in a different world.
A samba world.
Whatever they say.
Vallenato.
What about bachata?
Also, ask my students. They all dance it.
Hey, this is the privilege of married to an Ecuadorian woman. I know all this stuff.
See? Well, even if you know it, it should be in the list.
Well, there was no dance hall, and there's a strong Caribbean.
We should do a dance off here
community
to settle this now.
Here.
Yeah, for Roxanne.
I think that would work great on the radio, Greg.
I'm just shaking my head. I'm really shaking my head.
Adam, I'm live streaming it, so we're live.
Oh, nice. All right, passion's clearly running high on this topic. Let's talk about something else.
Definitely.
Let's talk about something else that might evoke some passion, maybe something with a little bit more heft to it. Former Georgia Congressman Tom Price, under a lot of heat right now. In his first months as Secretary of Health and Human Services, he took 24 private jet flights on the taxpayer's dime at a cost approaching $400,000. President Trump signaled that he was unhappy about this, and then yesterday Price apologized, saying that he will reimburse the government for the cost of his seat on the jets, not the cost of the whole jet flight, just the cost of his seat. Do we think that he's put this fire out?
When did misappropriating funds become this minor thing? I'm not a lawyer, but isn't that a criminal offense? Shouldn't, and I'd be fired for it. Why isn't he being fired for
it? Well, I mean, it does seem like what is excessive travel at taxpayer expense.
I thought you were going to have to defend him.
No, well, let me finish.
Uh-oh.
I'm about to finish. But, I think he should be allowed to explain why were some of the trips extremely necessary. I know some of the healthcare facilities that he's traveled to, some of them have been in somewhat of a dire need. He has offered
and
to
that
pay
money
it.
That
he has offered
was spent
to,
could be given to
pay
those
it back. Well, I guess the most damning thing I see is the fact that he really attacked Nancy Pelosi for this several years ago, and then it's kind of like. Well,
Nancy Pelosi is a goddess, my God.
But the hypocrisy, I hear what you're saying. The hypocrisy.
Regardless, it's not just his seat, the one that flew, you know? I mean, in my mind, this guy's so fired. I mean, his greed is representative of why the regular folks in this country don't have decent health care. I mean, this is not correct.
I think Obamacare has a lot to do with people not having decent, affordable health care.
Three so things. They three need things. To throw him in the swamp, number one. Number two, he should lose his job. Number three, he should have to reimburse not just for his seat, but coordinate the payback of all of the money. I think Politico is estimating that these costs are nearing $1 million.
Yeah, that's a recently updated figure.
That's not chump change.
No, that's a lot of money. It is chump change
relative to the actual, the bigger problems of waste, fraud, and abuse that affect the federal budget. I mean, this really is super tiny compared to the numbers that we're talking about that really impact whether or not the government can cover the checks that it writes.
But when you work as part of an administration whose priority is to drain the swamp, then it's not just a bad PR.
Y'all sure have overnight turned into fiscal conservatives. I'm so proud of y'all.
No. Perhaps Trump is just a pseudo alpha alligator, because I don't see him draining any swamp.
Okay. Someone can have a last thought on this.
Pay the money back. All
okay.
of it.
All
You're
of it.
Fired.
100% behind it. All of it.
All right. We're talking about the week's news here on The Break Room on Second Thought, Georgia Public Broadcasting. Let's go ahead and talk about Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has very strict laws concerning the conduct of women, strict even by the standards of the country's Islamic neighbor states. Here is a Saudi woman speaking through an interpreter on Al Jazeera about the news this week that Saudi Arabia will begin allowing women to drive.
I'm ready. My daughter is ready. And also society is ready. How much longer can we live in an oppressive society that prevents us from our full rights?
So, Tamika, what do you make of this news?
I think it's, another step forward with many more steps to go. And so I'm glad to see this move come forward.
I think it offers an interesting contrast between people protesting the United States right now and the fact that we're celebrating the fact that Saudi Arabia finally allowed women to drive. Sometimes you have to look and be grateful for the rights we do have. Are we a perfect society? No, but we've been letting women drive for pretty much before they could vote even, right? So the fact that they were able to drive before women's suffrage came into play should tell you something.
I think justice and equity are always goals to seek to achieve. And cultural relativism aside, I think it's important to look within one's own culture and examine how to move it better to make it a more ideal nation. And for Saudi Arabia, this is definitely a listening to a cry of a large population that has been oppressed. And women deserve the right to fully participate in their culture. And this is one step forward. And as Tamika said, there are more steps to go.
The road to Riyadh just got a little more freedom.
You know, the Saudis are getting realistic. Oil is not eternal. Women are more than 50% of the population. They're an economic resource. They need to get them online. And the next thing to happen is the elimination of male guardianship on every single woman in Saudi Arabia. They better get to it quick before oil finishes.
All right. Let's move on to another very pressing concern. Don't you just hate snakes?
Enough is enough! I have had it with these monkey-fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane! Everybody strap in! I'm about to open some freaking windows.
Wow, plus one to our producers for finding the clean version of that clip. I got scared there for a second.
That was a great transition.
Yeah, was that? Did he say Monday through Friday?
Monday through Friday.
I like that.
Oh, right. So, a Longhorn Steakhouse in Virginia had a snake problem. A copperhead bit a woman while she was dining.
I suppose
is it just justice for the fact that she was eating animals?
Yes.
It's the revenge of PETA. They put in copperheads apparently in there, but yeah, that's crazy.
Hey, power to them. I mean, I'm vegetarian. I mean, the only bad animal I find in my food is a dead one. We shouldn't be eating animals.
I'm laughing actually to keep from crying because I'm imagining what it must have been like for this woman who was eating, and then for this to happen. And I know a lot of people are terrified.
No joke.
Yes, absolutely. So
that'll ruin a Flo's filet right away, won't it?
And not a lot of people meet. Like the thought of you're just sitting around having a little dinner, and then a snake bites you on your sandal, bites your toes, and then does not let go. Yeah. She shook her shoe off, and the snake was still biting the shoe. I can't.
Normally the health inspector will come in and say, oh, they had bugs or they left food out of the freezer for too long. Mm-mm. Oh, no, they got copperheads here. Like, you don't want to eat at this Longhorn.
Part of the menu.
It's fried snake. That one didn't fry enough, apparently.
Oh, man. All right. I can't talk about that anymore. It's creeping me out.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Twitter. Let's talk about Twitter. When you only have 140 characters, you might sometimes get fed up with Twitter.
Well, I'm afraid he's quit Twitter. The events surrounding his quitting Twitter were very suspicious. Most people that quit Twitter leave at least three paragraphs stating that they're quitting Twitter before they quit Twitter. This child just stopped using it. One day he was on social media, and the next, poof.
Typically on point clip there from South Park. But now people really can spill their hearts out. Twitter is planning to expand the maximum character length from 140 to 280, or at least they're experimenting with it by allowing a few select users the privilege of tweeting 280 characters. I was one of them, although I've not yet exploited that because I'm not a person that has thoughts beyond 140 characters. I've learned to prune my ideas down to 140. It's been a painful experience for me, but, you know, my journey has led me this far. Folks, do we think that this is an improvement?
Yeah, well, you know, this made Trump's day because now he can assail NFL North Korea and Crooked Hillary in one tweet. So he has got to be ecstatic about this.
Brevity is the soul of wit. We do not need any more words. One of the good things about Twitter, it has taught people the power of synthesis.
Yeah. I can't with these longer rants. Twitter is like drinking from a fire hose as it is. The thought of 280 characters, twice as much. How about Twitter pay attention to people's cry for an edit function? I don't know. People's cry that they enforce their abuse behavior policy. Those might be areas that they should better spend their time figuring out how to address.
Well, but I suppose one of the theories here is that with 280 characters, people will have more space for nuance and won't be as prone to reaching for brief hyperbolics.
Well, people were sort of getting around it anyway using, images, right?
Yeah.
And so I think, I don't like this 280-word tweet universe that we're stepping into. I, too, am a fan of concise Twitter, short Twitter rants.
I believe they're tweets.
Or longer Twitter rants. Leave me alone, Greg. I can use Twitter rants, right? It's all about the competition, though, and Twitter has been really suffering as it relates to monetizing and really making some revenue. And Facebook is blowing them off the mat.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to one more topic to see if we can squeeze it in. At an event this week, Barack Obama, former president, opened up about dropping off his daughter, Malia, at college.
It was a little bit like open heart surgery. And I was proud that I did not cry in front of her. But on the way back, the Secret Service was all looking straight ahead, pretending they weren't hearing me.
Very sweet. Did that resonate with anyone else's personal experience?
Let's see who grabs.
Not so much, but it's a generational difference, right? So Obama is a parent who has come through the what some psychologists call the helicopter parenting stage.
Sure. Yeah.
My parents were dancing. All night.
Yeah.
And I was so excited. It was a mutual thing. And so there were no tears. There was, happy celebration. So a little bit of a difference there.
Yeah. I think my parents, who are probably listening live in Destin, Florida right now, hey, mom, hey, dad, they were mixed emotions. They were happy that, I was going to a good school and had a scholarship to UGA. But I think, both of them were realizing they were going to miss me. And then they realized their basement was free. And they were like, wow, we have a lot more space now. So it was kind of mixed emotions for them. I don't have kids yet, so I have not yet had to even drop them off on their first day of school. So it's hard for me to empathize with it. But I think I'll probably be pretty melancholy when that day comes for me 18 plus years from now.
I was just crying to hear him cry. So I'm going to be a hot mess when my kids go off to school, because I cried like babies when they went off to kindergarten. So I'm going to be a disaster. I'm preparing for it, and I'm just going to own it.
My son is going to college in a year. I'm trying to prepare him as well as I can for it, so that he behaves like a, true, decent human being.
Are you going to cry?
I think, very likely.
He's totally crying. He's crying
very
now.
Very likely.
Yeah, I think that the reason I'll be crying is that I will have absolutely no idea how to pay for it.
That too.
At this point, my only plan is to work for Mercer University for the rest of my life so that they can go here for free.
That's a good plan.
Yeah, that's not a bad plan.
All right, folks, great talking to you. We are out of time for the break room today. Thanks to my guests, Greg Williams, mortgage banker and host of the conservative radio show Greg's List. Check it out. Roxanne Donovan, professor of psychology at Kennesaw State University. Hector Fernandez, professor in the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Georgia State University. And Tamika DePriest, senior director of communications at Emory. Thanks, folks. Have yourself a great weekend.
Same thing.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
And that's it for our show today. As always, listeners, we'd love for you to chime in. We talked about having more characters for tweets. Would you use more characters for Twitter if you had them? Would you be more likely to use Twitter and read Twitter if everyone else had more characters to work with? Or do you think that there's value in the enforced brevity of 140 characters? Give us a call at 404-500-9457 and leave a message. You can, of course, tweet us. We're at OST Talk. For today and the week, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Adam Ragusea. I'll be back with you for a couple of days next week. Have a great weekend.